This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and welcome to Herding Code, sponsored by Telerik and Microsoft. How are you? This is the final episode with our original hosts.
So if you hadn't guessed, this is Herding Code. We are recording this week on the 25th of November, the day before Thanksgiving. And this week we have on as our honored guest, Mr. Scott Hanselman.
Honored guest. Did everyone catch that part?
Yes.
That was part of the...
Are you sucking up already, John?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was subtle. Yes. I didn't realize that you were going to sell out so quickly.
Oh, yes.
John.
Well, you should have seen how it was when we had Her Majesty Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands.
Are you serious?
No.
Wait, did you just subtly insult all of our other guests?
Did I? I guess I can go back and re-edit this.
I'm confused. I need to get used to the Herding Code sense of humor here, because I literally thought that you had the Queen of Netherlands on.
I believe she sponsored the show one time.
She did. Yeah, at the beginning of one show, I said, this show is brought to you by Her Majesty Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands. And then just nobody ever said anything about it. I like to throw things in there.
Not even your Dutch listener?
No, oh, one guy did. Yeah, actually, one guy did. And he's like, yeah. He was a little upset. Yeah,
a little offended.
Yeah.
There was, really?
I forget what it was. He said, yeah, we pay for her. We our taxes pay for her. You should have thanked the taxpayers of the Netherlands or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what this show needs? Leo Laporte. Leo Laporte.
Exactly.
You need a cranky old guy, and then you would have a show here.
Well, Kevin does that sometimes.
I thought that was me.
Well, yeah.
No? I thought that was Scott.
That's true.
Can I get crankier?
So are we going to start the show?
I can restart, yeah.
No. I think it's going really well.
Okay. So what are we talking about this week? Okay, I'll just... So we invited you on partly, Scott, because with my new job working for you, we had some people asking if the podcast was going away or if it was changing or if it was going to turn into the Data Grid Hour or, you know, that sort of thing. So I thought that it might be good to just, you know, talk.
Did you really have someone say that?
People just said, you know, are you going to, you know, like, are you going to be able to keep... It wasn't the Data Grid Hour, but that was my...
That was your analysis of what they were going for?
Yes. So
yeah, so your employment doesn't have anything to do with your podcast. You do whatever you want to. It's your podcast, right? I mean, you guys have a podcast.
Sure.
So I don't – yeah. I mean, we didn't hire you to have a podcast. So I think it's great. And I mean, I'm trying to say this in the way that would relax people the most. People like Hansel Minutes, that's me and Carl Franklin, right? That's our little – kind of side business that makes no money. You know, this is what exactly are you doing, honey? Please come to bed. That's what the podcast is.
Right.
I interview people and I, you know, because I work for the man, or at least have worked for the man for 2 years, 2 months and 5 days, then I can maybe get a better guest or like get access to like someone internally because I can just email them. But I'm certainly, no one tells me what to talk about on the show. So yeah, I'm not going to tell you what to talk about either. I mean, I might say, hey, there's a cool guy in Microsoft Research that you guys should have on, and that's going to be the extent of it.
That was really my only concern, is that now that we've got a man on the inside, we can beat you to those guests.
Well, but there was one small issue, though, about the show that we need to talk about, which was we need to get you off the show, Scott Kuhn.
That's easy.
Too many Scotts.
Not enough Scotts. Never enough Scotts.
Really?
We're going to change it to Scott Galloway and Scott Dente.
I was going to change my name to A. Scott or B. Scott.
So then that's right.
Just so you like Scott. Show up ahead of K. Scott in the mailing list.
This was the idea. People would start typing and then they would see me. It's kind of like when you name a company like AAA Towing, just so you can screw BBB Towing over.
And then quadruple A Towing or exclamation point Towing.
This is the kind of out-of-the-box thinking that caused me to hire John.
_ Towing.
And the humor. It just when that starts up, it's such fun.
So there is one burning question on everyone's mind, I think.
Okay, what's that?
And that's so that on the PDC show that you did there, the Live Channel 9 thing, interviewed Scott Stansfield.
Yeah, he's cool.
Word.
What do you mean?
New boss interviews old boss.
Oh no, I've known Scott Stansfield for 10 years. that was not awkward at all. No. I've known him for years. I called him before. Yes, I mean, for people who are listening who may not know what the background there is, Scott Stanfield owns Vertigo Software. Vertigo is where John, you know, has worked since he was born. And that is the idea that I may have hired John away from Vertigo is something that I wanted to make absolutely sure that nobody thought. So I, you know, John and I talked to Scott Stanfield very, very early on and, you know, assured him that it was not being, you know, snuck away or anything like that. And that, like I say, I've known Stanfield for, gosh, 10 years plus, so no problem.
So is this just going to be the show where we just turn
this
you
the
into
show where,
a Galloway apologist?
Basically, I just justify what, taking a chance on this guy.
That's right.
Okay, I mean, the show's over, right?
We can talk about netbooks now or whatever. I thought that was, because we did have a lot of people asking about that.
Really? That's amazing to me.
Well, yeah.
Who are these people? I mean, how long have you been in the community that people can't trust us to not, you know, I don't know. Every time I get a little defensive, not related to this, but just kind of like when, like I was tweeting on netbooks yesterday because I'm messing around with my Dell Mini 9 and I'm trying different netbook OSs and I tried Chromium, which is the Chrome bootable browser basically. And, you know, I went to all this work and getting the Chrome image onto a USB stick and da 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 da. And I boot off it and I tweet, oh, okay, it's a bootable browser. Yay. And people were like, oh, you're a Microsoft apologist. You know, you're in bed with Windows 7 Starter Edition, right? Because, like, you know, my pay is, of course, directly related to how many copies of Windows Starter Edition that we sell. And it's just like, come on, man. I mean, what do you got to do? As soon as you go to work for the man, you should be ready for this, John. It's over for you.
Oh, like, well, we've already stated that the first 10 minutes of every new Herding Code podcast is going to be blame John for all of ASP.NET woes.
Well, you know, so I did the little 8 minutes in the middle of the PDC keynote, and Scott Koo introduced me, and I did a favor. You know, if you listen to Hansel Minutes last week, you can actually hear where I was talking to Phil Hack, and Scott Goo calls in the middle of the show. And I have a special Scott Goo ring. That's the don't get fired ring. Pick up the phone. And Scott's like, hey, want to do my keynote? And I'm like, okay, yes, sir. Whatever you say. And so I go and I do this thing. And one of the things is to display data in a grid. So I use a data grid. And then on Twitter, they're like, Hanselman's been assimilated. It's over. Oh, my God. And I'm like, come on. You know, gosh, if I had some data and I wanted it in some kind of a rectangular shape with columns and rows, maybe a grid shape. I mean, what is the alt.net way to make a data grid? Is it just a for loop? Is that what you guys do? I mean, help me out here. I don't know why somehow I've become, you know, one become, yeah, exactly, a fluent interface to a data. I don't know. What do you do, right? Something i.want.a.openParent.closeParent.dataGrid, you know? I don't mean to be bitter or anything, but
you have to use a service locator to find your data grid.
First. Right. As long as there's a version of control and that you can prop in anyone else's data grid at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying that just because somebody drags data grid doesn't mean that they are a sellout to all of computer science. But apparently there is no data in grids in the authentic software engineering world. So end of speech.
Well, actually, we had a show with Greg Young where we discussed, you know, how you display data and different UI metaphors and how the old ones, you know, the spreadsheet is everything kind of UI is the wrong metaphor for most data. So,
well, I mean, everything's a UL eventually, right? It all turns into div class something and UL class something, I suppose. But, I mean, isn't Gmail a grid? Right? Is it not? I mean, is that a controversial statement? Gmail's a grid. Come on, help me out here.
I don't know. Everything's a grid. Everything's a triangle, technically. So,
well, I mean, I'm looking.
It can't be done with table tags. That's the restriction there. It has to be done with CSS.
I drug a Silverlight data grid onto a design surface. And apparently sold my soul to Satan himself.
A Silverlight data grid.
That's not an HTML table. I think you're good.
Yeah, I think yeah.
but it's angle brackets, right? So I don't know.
We'll have to get the council's ruling on this. But I think you're okay.
Well,
since no one in alt.net is really paying attention to Silverlight anyway.
Yeah.
So I think you're good.
Well, ultimately, the point is that when John takes the job, he's got to think about like what's his job, right? Which kind of gets to the. You know, maybe a
well, that's a good segue. What is John's job?
John is he's supposed to give me massages and do my work. Then I will then take credit for it so that I might look good. And then at some point, scramble over his broken body as I step over him to like greater management and more money.
And the dry cleaning, right? Pick up the dry cleaning Tuesdays.
Yeah, but that's supposed to be a secret. What's wrong with you? No, so the team that I work on works on a group called STO, Server and Tools Online. So from an organizational perspective, here's more information than you need. There's Scott Gu, right, who's a corporate VP, and his boss is Soma. And then you guys know who Soma is, right? Right? Super.
He was some tester on Windows NT, I think.
But now he runs the whole thing at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So Soma is Scott's boss, Scott Gu. And Soma is also Emma Williams' boss. So Emma runs our org, and Emma is in charge of a pile of stuff, from MSDN to patterns and practices to TechNet to basically anything that's online. So
she's over at Codeplex too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So So I mean, I could kind of draw the picture of the whole org, but yes, Codeplex is in there, and MSDN, and all the ASP.NET, Serverlight.NET, Windows Client.NET, IIS.NET, all the online education type stuff, patterns and practices, MSDN magazine, all that is in this group. And I used to work where it was me, my boss Simon Muzio, and then Scott Gu. And then Scott got promoted to a corporate VP, and then they moved us into Server and Tools Online. So we're still under Soma, and we still work with the product groups a lot, but we like to think of ourselves as being kind of who you turn to after file new project. You know, so it's like, okay, I've, you know, file new project, and now what? So whether that be books or screencasts or education or whatever. Our titles are officially Community Program Manager, which is just a generic term, program manager, with the word community shoved in front of it, which is kind of lame, which is why we just call ourselves like community liaisons. There are lots of different community PMs. There are ones like John Papa, for example, is a Silverlight guy that we just hired, but he works in the product group, and he does stuff like managing SDR, software design reviews, and there's like when the community works with like insiders and stuff and like has feedback coming from trusted advisors trying to get, I don't know, if some new sport announces that they're going to use Silverlight on their site, those kind of guys worry about that kind of stuff. Well, on the STO side, we're focused on broad community. So there's like the community PMs, Adam Kinney, John Papa, I think Scott Galloway was indirectly a community guy for a while. Those guys are product group community PMs. Chris Sells, I think, is a community PM as well as a feature guy. On our side, we're much more like online worldwide, which is different than like DPE, which is developer platform evangelism. They're marketing, and they mostly do very localized evangelism. That's what they call win-based. So like you might have like a guy who runs New York and a guy who runs Chicago and like that. And those guys sometimes will get called community guys as well, because the word community is such a big word that it fits basically everybody. Our team is focused on creating content, making sure that all the plates that Microsoft are juggling from a product perspective aren't being dropped. So there's like dozens and dozens of bugs and requests and feature things that may not get remembered or get caught or get captured, or someone might not even realize that it's truly, truly important. And we act as their advocates to make sure that those things get done. One of these days when I quit, I'll have to like write a tell-all book about all these different bugs and features and stuff that I kind of like saved, but I can't do it right now. John will be making sample applications. He'll be doing screencasts. He'll be writing content for MSDN. He'll be, you know, blogging whenever he gets a chance, doing tutorials. One of the things that I thought would be good about having John on the team was that he has a very kind of authentic, no BS kind of an attitude, and he skews a little alt. So I want his perspective working really closely with the product team. And I think that it just made sense with people like me and Phil and what they call the new generation. It's starting to infect the rest of the product group. Like there are lots of PMs whose names you may not know because they're not very loud that now have the good virus. You know, they want to get things out there in open source. They want to do things the right way. You know, Phil is doing a huge amount of work to make that happen, and I want John to continue to push the envelope. Does that make sense?
Did you know you were doing all that, John?
I've been taking notes frantically. Yeah. No, yes, yeah. I definitely did. But I mean, yeah, it is. I think it's something where it took some explanation when I was first talking to Scott and other people on the team, because they're from the outside, it can be a little confusing. It's like, well, are you an evangelist? You work for, how does that relate to Channel 9? Or do you work in the team? Or mm-hmm. are you develop, you know, like, so I think it does make sense, but it's good to, this isn't something that you regularly hear explained in the outside, you know, outside of Microsoft world.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people just think that we kind of hang out and blog stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like I spent, let me actually, you know what I'll do? I'll do this. I'm going to actually fire up Outlook here, and I'll look at my calendar, and I'll look, and we'll talk about what.
Here comes Robo Scott voice as soon as the CPU spikes.
No, not at all. Dude, I've got four procs, my friend. I haven't rebooted this machine in 8 months. This machine is golden. You don't even worry about it.
Is this the coding horror machine, or is this the next one after that?
This is the upgraded coding horror machine. Okay. So this is, let's take a look at my WEI, check your Windows Experience Index, processor 7.1, memory 7.1, graphics 6.5. The only thing that's slow on this is the hard drive, because it doesn't have a SSD yet, and I'll be upgrading it next week to an SSD. So yeah, this is pretty darn, 7.9 is the max on Windows 7. This machine moves at the speed of thought, so don't worry about the Robo Scott voice. I'm also transcoding Zune stuff in the background right now, just to make Scott upset.
Man.
Okay. So 4 weeks ago, I woke up and I had my my appendix out. You guys remember that? I don't know. I tweeted the whole time. It was pretty funny. Once I got out of the, isn't this exciting? And now Scott will read from his Outlook calendar. He needs this for a birdie. And I went to a meeting about WPF features in .NET 4 specific to graphics. I went to a meeting to talk about a new thing in ASP.NET I can't tell you about because I'd have to kill you. And then I took my kids to swim practice. We had a staff meeting to talk about the MSDN redesigns that we did recently and then what we're going to be doing next. We're starting to make MSDN more agile. We're starting to change lots of stuff. We talked about like MSDN library, you know how we changed that, the markup, to be much, much cleaner. There's like a thing called lightweight markup. We're talking about making that the default. So it'll be, you'll have like sub-second response all through the library everywhere. I'm pushing for stuff like, you know, PDF export and different things like that that I'm not sure I'm going to get, but that's one example. I thought it'd be cool to be able to like say, I want these six topics in MSDN, export them to a PDF and then read them on a Kindle or something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one feature here. I went to Sweden. And I spoke at a conference called Oradev. And then while I was there, I recorded a couple podcasts. I did two or three Channel 9 videos. I all the while was doing kind of like regular work. We were working with the what's called the field to try to get them content and presentations so that they can present like the new ASP.NET 4.0 content. That has to come from somewhere. So when you like, when you see a video, when you see a new sample, somebody has to sit down and write that kind of stuff. You got guys like, you guys know Jonathan Carter and Jason Olson and James Sr. You guys know any of these names?
Yes.
Yeah.
These are the guys that like are at the heart of it that are looking at the product group, looking at the field, trying, listening to what you guys are saying in the public and trying to figure out what's not getting said. See what I'm saying? It's like someone might sit around and say, you know, we've done some analysis. We've been listening on Twitter. We've been looking in the forums. We've been listening. We've been paying attention. And we've noticed that, let's just say, for example, people aren't using model binders correctly, right? That's just like a simple example. But that might be an example. Or not enough people know that you can do TDD with Visual Studio 2010. So how do we want to make sure that that gets out there? Does that make sense? It's not like malicious messaging. It's just literally, we want to make sure that people know what the system can do. Like, I don't know if you guys heard, I mentioned nHibernate in the PDC keynote because I want people to know that was like a shout out. I want people to know that that can be in the data sources view in Visual Studio 2010. So I'm going to have John focusing exclusively on ASP.NET. So he should be able to get people like the scoop about what's going on. Get, you know, reconciling web forms, reconciling MVC, what's next? You know, all that kind of stuff. What happened to dynamic data? Where's dynamic data now? I want him to answer those questions in an authentic way.
So I had a couple of questions, and I don't want the first one to kind of come off as hostile or anything.
Oh, all of your questions are hostile, Spencer.
So you got quite the sausage party going on here with the STO ninjas, and I'm just wondering if...
You mean like everyone's were, like an old fat
everyone's,
white
guy? Yeah. And I was just wondering if it was because there were just no female applicants and there's no qualified or...
I had two female applicants, one of which was be a name that you would recognize immediately. But then the most qualified female applicant pulled out at the last minute and said, this is, you know, I'm going to go in a different direction in my career. So I would love nothing more than to have not a white guy on the team. But, you know, sadly, in the U.S. at least, this is kind of – a lot of the folks in community in our space tend to be loud white guys in their mid-30s. You guys know me and my background and my family, and I would love nothing more than to have people like that who are not, when I say people like that, I mean not people who look like me, get involved. And I think it'd be great. And I do a lot, anytime I can, you know, bring up issues of diversity. Like you guys know, I was tweeting earlier today a couple of times that the lead architect of the Halo engine is a woman, which is pretty cool. She's featured on the Channel 9 homepage right now. But it's just nobody showed up. Nobody showed up. I hunted a couple of ladies down and tried to get them to do interviews, and it's just they weren't really into it. I've got another opening, though, for a scripter, JavaScript, kind of a JavaScript exclusive hardcore jQuery type. So, you know, if you know anybody and you're not a white dude, please step up.
So that answer another question? Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's kind of what I expected. It wasn't meant to be a hostile.
I don't think it was a hostile question. It's an obvious question.
Yeah. So the second one is that I was wondering if you had any plans. I know this is kind of there's organizational things at Microsoft, and then there's, you know, the way that we see them on the outside. Mm-hmm. And so, like, SQL Server is not a part of, I don't think, DevDiv and kind of the area where you guys live. And that's kind of, you know, they're on a different part of the big giant chart. But I know if you had any plans to bring in data people.
Also. Oh, like you mean like on – okay, so, yeah, there's been a bunch of reorganizations and stuff. And we collectively, I think, are starting to get our ish together when it comes to data. And I think you'll start seeing that slowly over the next maybe 6 months on msdn.com/data. There are a number of existing community folks that work over there that will hopefully start becoming more visible. And, you know, I would definitely love to have somebody in the data space. But there's still stuff to come around data that I can't tell you about because I would be fired. But we see the writing on the wall and what people want. And I think that code first and the framework is a piece of it. Making sure that providers support, you know, like the things within Visual Studio support everything, like whether you want Astoria over in Hibernate or you want to get in Hibernate in the data sources window, or, you know, MVC not being judgmental about data. We're starting to get our act together. When we start getting our act together, yeah, definitely I want to get a data person.
So I think one of the concerns people have about, you know, John joining the mothership is that, you know, even though John has been sort of the token Microsoft shill on the show.
Is he really?
Yeah. I pretty much am. Yeah.
Okay. He is known from time to time to say some critical things about Microsoft. And, you know, is he going to...
As are we all, I hope.
Well, that is the question. Is he going to be constrained? Is he going to feel constrained from doing that, you know, now that he's part of the collective?
Well, the only thing that happens when you start to work for Microsoft is that if you say something mean or uneducated or malicious, the person who works on that team can now find you in the address book and call you. So that can be uncomfortable. Early on, I, you know, said a couple of things, you know, about just stuff, whether it be IE. This was like before IE8 kind of time, or when IE8 was coming out. And then suddenly you get an email from like the lead architect of that thing. And then they go, hey, why were you being a dick? You know, I'm working here. I've got a team of 12 guys. We're doing XYZ, right? I mean, if a Microsoft person said, yeah, the new MSDN redesign sucks. Man, Hanselman's an asshat. I would probably chat him and like, dude, what's the deal? So I would have to say that Microsoft people, depending on their personalities, do tend to subscribe to the if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything kind of model. But that's a personality-based thing. You know, there are certainly very well-known Microsoft bloggers that just go on about things sucking, and that's it. You know, it's not going to limit his movement within Microsoft from my perspective. Although he will have to look the ASP.NET team in the eye. So being critical and being measured about that criticism is appreciated. Being a dick and putting a permalink on it is not. Does that help clear up that, Kevin?
Well, there's kind of one other aspect to this, and that prior to joining Microsoft, like when he worked for Vertigo or worked with Phil, you could talk about competitors in a negative light, and it's not necessarily, I don't know. How do I say? So when I started work at F5, you know, I suddenly kind of realized that there were things like I wouldn't want to go out and talk much about Cisco or Zeus or any of the other kind of competitors to F5 out there.
Sure.
And some of that was related to stocks. And there's like certain things that you can't talk about from the financial point of view.
Really? I don't know anything about that. I know that it's just if I've always, as a person, kind of gone with the don't, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say it. So I think I'm, I don't know. I would encourage John to just be thoughtful, but I don't think he should change his personality. I mean, he shouldn't be like, yeah, Google can kiss my, you know, I mean, what's the point of doing that? And he shouldn't overcompensate either. He shouldn't try to be like, he shouldn't change who he is. He shouldn't.
Well, so that is bringing, you brought up another point earlier that will, for better or for worse, and, you know, we're just going to sit here and talk about John the whole time.
yeah, it's kind of weird.
Talk at him, I guess, while he's sitting there.
All right, dude.
He'll have to edit this later. Suddenly, everything that he says is going to be colored with this Microsoft brush. So if he says,
okay, well, yeah, let's talk
Gmail was slow for me today, he's going to say, well, of course you'd say that because...
Okay, that's good. So let's talk about that, for example. People seem to think that I or whoever, I'm speaking on behalf of all of Microsoft at this point, will say something simply for the job. And that's just cheesy. That's just insulting, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like the idea that I would, you know, take some turd that Microsoft came up with and polish it and try to sell it just because I need the job implies a couple of things. One, it implies that I'm inauthentic. Two, it implies I'm some kind of a salesman. And three, it implies I need the job in the first place, right? And I certainly don't need any job enough that I'm going to go and take a turd and polish it and try to sell it to somebody, okay? You know, and like the PDC keynote's a perfect example. So I'll use me as an example and I will apply it to John. The very first thing I said when I got in my first meeting, the Wednesday before the PDC keynote, was to the organizers, because there's a bunch of people behind that, right? I mean, I do my little 8 minutes, but there's like a team of like a dozen people who built our, you know, RIA services and worked very hard. So I went in and I said, I need to feel good about this demo. I need to feel authentic about the demo. I need to make sure that it reflects the team well and that it doesn't offend my sensibilities as a programmer. And I said, I said, and if it doesn't, we should find someone else, right? Now, I'm not saying that I'm like, you know, this angel or so this is somehow amazing. But the point is that I would expect nothing less of anyone else to, you know, it's not like it's the most comfortable thing in the world. But yes, I sit down with Scott Gu and the organizers and say, I want to feel good about this thing or I don't want to put my name on it. And that's come up probably, I don't know, maybe 3 times this year where I've said, you know, this isn't really something I want to get involved in. And that may or may not be a career limiting move, but I can sleep at night and I sleep like a baby.
Well, and I think ultimately that's good for everybody, right? Because it's very easy to lose that, you know, external view of being authentic. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, you're just, you know, like if it should be ridiculous for somebody to say, well, you're just a shill. Of course you're saying that. Like it should be ridiculous. And that takes.
Well, but that's not going to change it from happening though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I love Windows 7. It's easy to love because it kicks ass. That doesn't mean that I, while we've been talking, haven't been trying to boot Ubuntu on this stupid Mini 10, but I can't get the display driver to work. Does that mean that Ubuntu sucks? No, it doesn't. It just means I can't get the display driver to work for some reason. Does it mean I'm, you know, I will use the operating system that makes me happy, and I will use the development tools that make me happy. And if someday Microsoft tools don't make me happy anymore, I'll work somewhere else. But I like the stuff that I work on, and I hope that you do too. And when you don't like it anymore, you should quit. You know,
actually, Ubuntu 9.10 does kind of suck, but that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, well, it's got some issues. Yeah. 9.04 was a much better thing, and then I'm having a heck of a time. There's people, 9.04, the April release, because Ubuntu goes, they go the year and then the month, and they come out with stuff in April, and they come out with stuff in October. And they've got the Ubuntu Netbook Remix. There's the image file that they released with the 9.04 version. It lets you go directly to a USB key, and they stop releasing the image file, and they start putting out ISOs. And I have to go and take that and manually put it onto an image file. It's a huge hassle. I get Ubuntu half-booted, and then it doesn't put my display driver up. So, wait a second. Did I just show that I know something about Linux? I'm sorry. I need to stop doing that. I apologize.
And yeah, John, you can always cut this out if it's boring. But yeah, my issue is I've got a wireless driver that it says the wireless. Everyone says the wireless card works flawlessly with Ubuntu on this Dell. But it comes up, it connects.
What kind
of? And then it's a Dell laptop, E6400.
Okay. Yeah. So the problem is that the Broadcom wireless is a restricted driver.
No, this is an Intel. This is an Intel Wi-Fi card in there, and
it,
so
it
connects.
Update already?
Yeah. Yep. I even reverted back to the 9.04 drivers. And what happens is it'll connect. It'll let me browse to some sites. Mm. But like then it'll just time out on some. It'll just randomly drop the connection and then reconnect instantly. Mm-hmm. And so
sounds like a WPA thing.
I'm poring over logs, trying to figure out what's wrong, and I'm about ready. But if I boot up in OpenSUSE, it works perfectly and flawlessly.
Well, figure out what the driver that OpenSUSE is using, and then compile that driver into your stuff. I mean, on my Dell Mini 9, I had to go and install the BCMWL kernel source stuff for the Broadcom wireless, but I shouldn't have to do that. I mean, 9 versions in, I shouldn't have to do that.
Oh, well, see, I was used to having to compile that Realtek driver way back in the late 90s and early 2000s manually and load those up.
Well, not to mention when Linux changed the whole sound card thing and Ubuntu switched sound card. I mean, there was like a 4 months there I couldn't even have sound on my machine because they changed the way the high-level sound stuff works. I've got this freaking thing. I boot up, and I hit default, and this is the thing that blows me away. Like, when Grub comes up, or the Grub equivalent, which is the bootloader for Ubuntu, it says, hey, look, that works. And I can see it because I can, right? It actually displays. I hit enter. I can see it. I can see it. I can see it. Unpack root TFS. And then the video card goes to crap. It's like, well, I could see it when it started up. That was the right one. That was the right video card. Keep doing that. You know what I'm saying?
Are there this goes back a ways, but when I was trying to get, I distributed a mono ISO or live CD for a while, and I had to dig all over the place to find the right command line arguments for the video card. Like you could,
oh yeah,
and also for booting, any kind of Linux in virtual PC, and you could say you could pass like arguments to the video.
Yeah, yeah. When you're in Grub, you hit tab, and then you have to go and do that. It's a huge hassle.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean. See, now we're going to get in trouble now because we talked about.
Sure.
Yeah. Someone from the Windows team is going to email you.
That's what you get.
Because they could find you.
Maybe Raymond Chen. Didn't he contribute to Linux at some point way in the past?
He did.
I don't know.
He did. I remember he did contribute something to the kernel way back when.
See, I just wanted to know what the best operating system to run on my netbook is. And the thing that blows me away is that I've tried Chromium today. I've tried, what was that thing called?
Have you tried Moblin?
Moblin, which is nice, but Moblin was pretty, and it was very kind of jelly vision, you know, kind of like Jell-O, and it worked just fine. I tried, I'm trying Ubuntu Netbook Edition. The irony here, and again, here's the Microsoft shill, the one that works the best for me is Windows 7 Ultimate. Like, Ultimate.
Yeah.
You know, like, let me say it again. Ultimate, you know? I don't know why
that's
anyone...
That's what I'm running on.
If you can, afford Ultimate, get Ultimate. It just doesn't make any sense. Why do I want an operating system that's slow and lame when I can run Visual Studio on Hulu on my Dell Mini 9, my now discontinued Dell Mini 9? If anyone wants to buy a Dell Mini 9, email me at herdingcode. Seriously, I want to sell it. I want a Dell Mini 10 because size matters.
I've got Win 7 Ultimate on my netbook too, and it runs like a dream.
Yeah, dude, it's hot. I just can't get the video to work. Bummer. Anyway, sorry.
Is there anything else? I mean, netbooks are awesome. Ubuntu on netbooks. No, I'm just curious if there's...
Good segue.
Well, the ultimate Linux desktop manager for me, and I'll just throw in this plug, has always been Fluxbox. It's the absolute best. It's nothing. It is what they call the slit and a tiny little taskbar at the bottom and workspaces, and that's it. It is the ultimate in minimalism.
Magical. Yeah, I run, you know, even my Mac now runs Windows 7. I got burned by Snow Leopard, so I just deleted all my guest stuff on my kitchen PC, so I switched it to Windows again. Get the family pack, it's $150 for three copies. Anyway, cha-ching, that was the sound of my Microsoft stock going up right there, sorry.
That's right.
All right, so I have an actual question if K-Scott or Kevin don't.
Oh, please.
And it's for John, as a matter of fact.
Oh, good.
And Scott can't talk until John is done.
Ooh.
Which Scott?
Go ahead. K. Scott is always welcome to talk because he brings the class and intelligence that Kevin and John also bring to the program. And then there's me.
So anyhow.
So John, what is your first area? Well, you know, so there's going to be priorities set for you by other people who make more money and have bigger titles and offices with corners and things in them. But what's going to be your first, you know, what's your first priority? If they said, John, what do you want to do first? what's the first thing you want to work on or fix or evangelize or make or whatever? What would you do first?
Well, I mean, some of the things, and I obviously can't commit to anything at this point, is like Microsoft is doing this or whatever. But some things that I when I talked to Scott earlier that I'm excited about is that you can build, you know, awesome state-of-the-art standards-based websites with ASP.NET. Like you can build really great stuff. And so I want to like push that side of it. So that is one thing. I think that it'd be great to show, you know, that like there's no reason when you go to the ASP.NET website or MSDN that you shouldn't get the feeling that Microsoft is like on top of exactly what's going on with web development. So I think like showing some leadership in terms of like really knowing, you know, here's what Microsoft does, here's where cutting edge web development is, and the two go very well together. So that's one thing. And then I think one kind of like specific example is we're talking about some updates to the Nerd Dinner sample. And I think that's great because it's a concrete example. It's a working application. The code is available open source, but then it's also a place where, you know, there's great opportunity to show off development practices, to show off leveraging new and cutting edge things in web development, you know, web standards, micro formats, specific things that might light up in different browsers depending on what's supported, that kind of thing. So those are some of my first thoughts. I mean, obviously then I'm communicating there's a lot of new things coming in right now as far as, you know, .NET 4 and all that. So definitely work cut out in that area. I don't know if that's specific enough, but those are some things that come to mind.
So as an aside, when you started talking about, you know, you can build cutting edge websites with ASP.NET, I'm assuming you're meaning web forms.
Why?
Huh?
What? Because everyone already knows you can do that with MVC.
Well, you can do it with both. I'm not sure what the question is.
Yeah. Well, so that was, I guess he's just going to focus on the platform itself.
So,
because one of the things that I thought was interesting about the PDC demos,
yeah,
was that every time I looked at the sample code, all of the websites were done with MVC and not web forms.
For which samples? What are you talking about?
Most of the samples that I saw, at least during the Scott Goo keynote, the second day, the Goo note.
Well, he didn't show any code. So which samples do you think were maybe?
No, well, he showed the airline one, I think. There was a couple of other ones that had downloadable samples. Like, you can go and see this right now.
Oh, yeah.
And the ones that either were hosting Silverlight or were, you know, were just plain websites with Silverlight built into them. Sure. I think they were all MVC sites.
I haven't seen that the code is downloadable for stuff yet.
Yeah. Yeah. They tweeted it a couple of times.
Okay. I'll check it out.
Definitely the airline one was. I think it's on CodePlex.
Okay.
But I thought it was interesting that all of the, I even noted it while we were watching the keynotes, that I didn't see web forms in essence anywhere. Another thing I didn't see, ugly URLs. So whether or not they were web forms, and I missed one.
Well, remember that there's a web forms router built into .NET 4. So right. You're never going to be able to look at the URL and tell anymore.
Right.
It doesn't work that way anymore. Do you acknowledge that, Scott?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know it's in there.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just pointing out that you can't look at the URL and say if it doesn't have .ASPX. And a lot of people are making MVC applications that have the old style.
We shun them.
But I'm just saying that permalinks are permalinks, right? So sometimes people like to maintain them.
Mm. Right.
So I don't think that it's going to be unusual to see either web form site that have friendly URLs or the opposite.
I'm just wondering about what to talk about next, or if that's a good stopping point, or
I'm worried that my episode of Hurting Code was going to be the one that had no content, and then I'm going to be blamed. I'm like Yoko, and I'm worried about that.
No, I think you explained more of what the STN engines are doing.
That's true.
Because up until because when you first got hired, you know, we all kind of joked and said, well, you know, what is Scott actually doing at Microsoft? And they're like, well, he's paid to be Scott. Because you were basically doing kind of what you were doing before, you know, blogging, podcasting, evangelizing.
Yeah, I just turned it up to 11. Yeah.
Yeah. You just had more access now than you did before because you were right there. And so then you hired on like five people all at once.
Well, no, I didn't hire them on. They were already there, but they just reorged us.
No. Didn't you hire John Papa?
No. John Papa works in Silverlight directly. He works in the product group.
Oh, Pete Brown,
Pete Brown. Okay, so my team is Jesse Liberty, doing Silverlight.
He was already there.
Tim Heuer doing Silverlight, already there.
Yeah.
Joe Stagner. Pete Brown I hired. And then I hired John. And I got one more opening.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So, yeah, they were just kind of, so you just kind of organized them into a cohesive fighting unit.
Well,
you're,
I mean,
like, you're like the Lee Marvin in the Dirty Dozen, except you only got five.
I like to think of myself as more like Face Man from A-Team, but I'll take Lee Marvin. Okay. Oh. Yeah, but we are, you know, we're small enough that no one, that internally we don't get noticed too much, you know? I mean, we worry about the same stuff everybody else worries about, you know? Are we getting enough work done? Are we moving the ball forward? Is somebody going to notice us and then make our little group go away? We worry about organizational stuff. Are we working for the right group? You know, should we work closer to the product group? Is it better that we're farther away from the product group, that we can really affect them? You know, we right now we get a lot of props for being close to but not in bed with the product group, if you know what I'm saying. So people listen to us internally at Microsoft. We're kind of like thought of as an independent group, because by John not working for the ASP.NET team, that gives him more credibility, and he can come in and provide feedback and drive features and stuff. But at the same time, he still works for Microsoft, so he's privy to all the kind of secret, magical, wondrous world that we have that he's going to learn about on Monday when he starts his Neo. They actually call it Neo, New Employee Orientation, the whole blue pill, red pill day.
You know, actually, that is, I think you mentioned it a little bit before, but that is like an important point. There's the flow of information outwards, but then the point of like the flow of information inwards, like the liaison being a two-way street, and that it's important to, you know, if people are asking, if people are upset that there aren't features or that the priorities are wrong from what the product group is doing, that the point is to get that information back to the people on the product teams.
And then this is the part where people always make that joke where they say, I take the specs from the customer to the, I've got people skills.
So another question I have is, how closely, if at all, are you guys going to be working with like MS Education and that side of things?
MS Education. What is MS Education?
Like the I don't know what the internal name is, but the folks that do the tests.
And the Microsoft Learning.
Learning. That's what it is. Yep. Yeah.
You mean like the certification people?
Yeah, certs and the tests and the people that are like writing the training materials and
I don't usually talk to them, but I used to be big on certs and stuff, and I got a pile of them. I used to hang out with Patrick Hines. If you're familiar with Patrick Hines, he is known for he was the guy who got all of them.
Yeah.
Like his claim to fame is that he had every single certification. And then he just said, "Eh." So, you know, I'm not a huge fan of certification. I actually wrote a blog post a while back about how I thought that instead of having comma MCSD at the end of your name, you should have comma 5 successful projects, comma 2 failed, you know, something a little more real world. Certs are great, but I don't think that they tell you that you are deeply familiar with a product. They don't tell you that you are deeply competent in a product. They're not really on my radar, but if you think there's a big problem there, I can engage them and we can figure out what's up. What do you think I need to do with those guys?
Well, I don't really know. It just seemed like that, you know, there's kind of these, there's your group and there's PMP that are kind of putting forth real world kind of stuff. Cause you've built stuff, you know?
Yeah. Because everyone's worked in the real world. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. And then there's the learning side where everyone just kind of poo-poos them and half the people, you know, go out and they, you know, they're like Pokemon, try to collect all the certs they can. And then, you know, the people that are doing the hiring and other people are kind of like, you know, these certs are worthless because they just go to these cert farms.
So this offends your sensibilities, you're saying?
Well, no, I just think that it might be a way for PMP and you guys to work with them to make the tests more legitimate, more real world, instead of just, you know, does person X know the feature checklist for ASP.NET or for, you know, stuff like that. Because I took a couple of the VB certs way back when it was VB6. Mm-hmm. And, like, there was stuff on there that I never, ever, ever used.
Hang on. Which VB6 test?
I took there was a server and a client one, wasn't there?
Yeah, Scott knows where this is. K. Scott knows where this is going.
Yeah.
I wrote those tests.
Oh. So there was two of them. And
I'm totally stuff on there. Serious. I totally wrote those tests.
So there's stuff like the property bags that I never used.
I used them, though, and you're a bad programmer.
That could be. But it almost seemed like there were some other certs on there, like the InterDev one. I think I took that test as well.
Yeah.
And you know, there was stuff that was just, you know, stuff you would never use in the real world because a lot of the InterDev stuff was just, you know, not performant enough. Let's put a nice blunt point on it. But, you know, they were still on the test and you had to know them. It was like a feature checklist. And you could just go and study, and sometimes you didn't even have to study if you were proficient enough. You just go and take the test and you'd pass. But they didn't really cover, well, at the time, they wouldn't have covered this. But now, like, I wonder how much the Microsoft Certified Architect covers things like, you know, messaging and scalability and, you know, kind of that kind of architecture stuff versus, you know, just can you wire things up on the EF designer in the tool? Or do you know the official recognized way, the demo way to create RIA services versus, you know, when you're dealing with actual stuff that's real messy data, mm-hmm. trying to wire them up. And so that was just one of this is kind of a spur of the moment. That's what I thought that you and PMP and other people could do. They could provide that kind of guidance in the exams.
Okay. Well, next time I'm up, one of the things that I need to do is that when John comes up, he'll do Neo, and then I've got to decide who he should meet with. Like, I need to, you know, show him around, make sure because internally, getting stuff done at Microsoft is largely who you know, and I got to introduce him all around, and then he's got to take it from there. So I don't think I've actually, in the 2 years I've been at Microsoft, sat down and talked to the folks over there. So he's got to run around, kiss babies, and give hugs and stuff, and I'll make sure that he meets whoever works in that in those teams. I can't guarantee anything because making a change that as large as you're describing is probably a big deal. You got to work your way up up the food chain, as they say. That's been the hardest part about Microsoft, is figuring out how to influence people to see things your way. And I think that's why people on the outside get the most frustrated, is that things don't, you know, they're like, can't you just call the guy that owns Foo and then get Foo fixed? It's way harder than that.
Like I said, I haven't taken any certs simply because
you're over them. You're like better than
them. Yeah, they don't provide any value. My resume provides much more value than a certification, I think, at this point.
Well, and maybe certifications are for people that don't have those resumes yet, right? I mean, would you hire a kid straight out of school? Or would you hire a kid straight out of school with a couple of certs? Or would you hire a kid straight out of school with a couple of certs and a couple of open source projects, right? I mean, certs are better than nothing, right? I mean,
I think it helps people distinguish themselves a bit.
Certs are a piece. They're a start. I think that just like one could argue that college proves that you can say you're going to do something and do it, I think that a cert does the same thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. And when I see somebody who doesn't, this is an opinion here, right? So I'm not like insulting your listeners, but let's say that you're a person who started a 4-year degree and then 3 years into it, you just said, screw it. And you just quit. And now 15 years later, you're 12 credits away from a degree. It is my opinion that that is lame because it says that there was something fairly important that you chose not to finish. I say this also with the luxury of being someone who worked very hard to finish school and did it in 11 years, finishing a 4-year degree. So I respect when people try and try again and actually solve the problem. So given that a credential or whatever you call it, a cert is easy in the sense of it's study a bunch, know your stuff, work on a couple projects and spend $50 and take it, I think it should be treated with that much respect.
Well, in the physical sciences, we used to say that, you know, a bachelor's meant that you knew how to learn, a mm-hmm. master's meant you knew how to think, and a PhD meant you knew how to lead. And that was kind of the distinguishing way that we would...
No, that's a good way to put it. I would even go so far as to say, in my experience, people who have a PhD are people who absolutely will stick to something and go until it's finished. When I meet people that are like ABD, meaning all but dissertation, where they did a lot of work and then they didn't actually close the deal... I think that's kind of sad. You know what I mean? Like when all you haven't, you've done all your work, all your credits to get your PhD done, but then you didn't close the deal. That's unfortunate.
And Scott, they do bring in outside people to work on those exams.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I was an outside person when I wrote the VB6 questions for desktop and web, those were both done as a contractor.
Sure.
Yeah. I've got a good friend that I worked with a while ago, Matthew Roche, who I think works in MS Learning now. I know he's a PM at Microsoft, and I think it's in the learning division. But he was an MCT for a long time, and he was always going up there to work on the SQL exams. He was a big SQL guy. So in terms of Patrick Hines-ness, he went out to get every database cert there was. He got Oracle certs. He got I think he got DB2 certs.
Good for him, right?
But he knew his stuff too. He wasn't just a paper.
Well, know. I will say this though. It is hard to just read a book and take a test. I mean, I'm sure it's possible to do that, but in the last 10, 15 years, it's definitely harder and harder to just show up cold and take a test if you don't know the content.
Yeah. Well, and we had a small nerd dinner a few weeks ago with some people who were up specifically to help in MS Learning test creation and things like that and training materials. And so I know they bring in outside people, and those people try to bring in, you know, an air of real world development and
hopefully more than an air.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they try to make sure that, you know, this represents something real and not just demo ware kind of stuff. Cool. But it is kind of an uphill battle because you've got to.
Well, let me ask you this. This is kind of a funny question. You said that you don't really dig the whole certification thing. You don't take. When was the last time you took one, though? VB6?
Oh, it's. And the only reason I took those was because they provided a raise.
Wouldn't arguably then, and I'm pushing back a little bit, wouldn't you be the last person who should be speaking on certifications?
Oh, definitely. But, you know,
so I reject all your previous criticism.
Opinions are like noses. Everyone has one. They all smell. And
right,
I'm not the only person.
But your opinion's based on 10-year-old data.
It's based on 10-year-old data, but it's also based on hearsay. It's also based on hearsay from other people who have
recently. 10-year-old anecdotes and hearsay? This is a rock solid case that you're putting up here.
Yes. Well, also 10 years of interviewing people who have had certs and haven't known some basic.
That would be the definition of hearsay then.
Well, I don't know. It was firsthand interviewing them.
That's hearsay.
They would come in with certs, and I would ask them questions, and they wouldn't know the answer.
Right. It's still hearsay, counselor.
Well, you're talking then about the effectiveness of the cert in meaning as currency. You're saying like, okay, great, they got the cert, but they're not
right. So if someone comes in with open source projects that I can go and look and see their commits.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Then yeah, it's different than, you know, here's a cert I took, and I don't know if they actually studied for it, if they went to a cert mill.
Right. Of course, with an open source project though, you don't actually know if they wrote the code.
Don't know if they wrote the code, but, you know, at least I have a base for quizzing them on. I suppose I could ask them to take the cert in front of me as well. For the test.
You could also check. You could also use SPN Blame or whatever and find out if they actually checked that code in.
Now, there's a new thing. You know, you can students can buy papers online and that kind of thing these days with the internet, and which makes
with
me upset.
With the internet.
But now, what? I bet you could pay some open source hacker to just commit a bunch of stuff in your name, and then now you're getting the job.
You'll eventually get a nail though when you can't actually produce. that might get you a week's work, but probably not much more than that.
Anywhere that knows enough to look for open source participation is also going to know if you're not doing your job. That's true.
Hmm. Yeah, and then ultimately your customers are completely unemployed all the time, so I don't see an opportunity there.
It's pretty hard to perpetrate in this industry, I would say.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but I have worked at places where people just got interviewed awesomely, and I gave the, you know, a higher recommendation along with other people, and then they just didn't do the job for whatever reason. Yeah,
is there something you want to tell me?
No, just not saying. At this time. No, saying. but I mean, like, for instance, that I think, like Scott Kuhn was saying earlier, that one of my mistakes, like, I studied hard to get an MCSD. In VB6, and then I hired somebody because I was pumped full of questions on VB6, and I asked him all these questions, and he just did brilliantly in answering the questions, but he didn't actually produce software for me, you know.
Yeah.
And I had projects that needed to be completed, and he was more of a theorist and less of a practitioner. So I think that, you know, like you're saying, passing an exam doesn't necessarily say, you know, that you can put all these concepts together and produce software.
See, and I'm kind of the other way, in that I do fine once I get hired, but I'm a lousy interview. Like I just forget.
Are you really?
Things. Yeah, I cannot. You ask me to code stuff on the board, and I'm like, can it be pseudocode, please? Because I'll forget all sorts of crap, and it's embarrassing how much I forget when I'm up there. And I don't know if it's stage fright or performance anxiety or what, but, like, you know, here, you know, wire
That's
up this
funny.
Data source, and I'm like, I don't know.
You should drag a data grid. That's better.
Just drag it. I've been like, I just try to think back. I'm like, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? I don't know. And I just get like analysis paralysis.
Wow, that's amazing. So that would be why. So now we will come full circle, and this is why you're so against testing.
Actually, no, I do better on tests thanks to all the schooling. I know how to take tests.
You have a lot of schooling?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I got a BS. I did some graduate work in biochem and took the MCAT, which is the medical college admissions test. And part of the preparation for the MCAT is they teach you how to take multiple choice tests. You know, the whole whittle it down to two. And if you don't know the answer, whittle it down to the best looking choices and then flip a coin kind of thing, and how to read the question and read the answers and try to divine the answer out of it. I would be one of those people where you would see all my certs, and then I would go into the interview and go, this guy didn't know squat. He bought those certs. He paid someone to take those for him in his name.
I need to start listening to your guys' show. I'm teasing. I listen to the show when I drive up to Seattle. I'm driving up on Monday because for John's his NEO, his new employee orientation. So I usually take my list from my blog's set of podcasts. I put a list up a couple of months ago of all the different podcasts I listen to, and I usually grab all the kind of the usual suspects type stuff. I get NPR and Fresh Air and Ricky Gervais, and then you guys.
Car Talk?
Less and less with the Car Talk. If I want to hear a bunch of guys from Boston laughing, I usually will listen to Car Talk. But I would have to say that lately I've not been deeply into Car Talk now. Well, did someone just pick up the phone over there? I thought I heard a woman's voice.
Hello?
That must have been you.
That was our sponsor.
That's right.
It's Telerik. We love Telerik.
No, that's Queen Beatrix, Her Majesty.
No, the Dutch.
It comes full circle.
Oh, it does.
All right, and now that we've got the full circle, I can do the Seinfeld ending. So thank you for catching us this week on Herding Code, and we'd like to thank Telerik and Scott Hanselman and Her Majesty Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands. So thank you very much, Scott, for joining us.
I am always happy to provide zero content to the community. Thank you.
When we auto-tune it, it's going to sound awesome. So
really? You do auto-tune
it? Oh, man, I would love to. I messed with it before, but you know, it's not as simple. You run a normal voice through an auto-tuner, and it doesn't really sound that good. Like, to do real auto-tuning, you got to use a keyboard. And
we're not really musical talkers, I don't think.
I'll work on it.
I ran it through, and the only one that really changed was Kevin, I think, some, and Case got a little bit, but
scandalous.
Not much.
Yeah. All right, that's it for Herding Code. Catch us next week. All right,
catch
you the week after that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and by the way, you're fired. So do we keep the show, or should we edit something out? I'm not sure.
We could keep the part about the netbooks.
Okay, good. No, that was the Linux part.